Welcome back to another episode of the Street Alpha Podcast. I'm your host, Tooks, and we are at T1 today to interview Motive Video and PRP. So now we have Andrew and we have Herman from Australia. So let's clap it up for Andrew and Herman.
That is for you, Herman.
So due to time, we're going to try to get this done in like maybe an hour and a half. Herman has to catch a flight. So
I've got all day. I can do 10 hours if you like.
I wish.
You guys will
I
be
wish.
Left. I'll still be here talking.
Yeah. He'll talk for 10 hours too. Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't mind.
Oh, that's when my break will be. Mouth full 10 of hours I'll have my break and then we'll go further.
take your first breath of air and then go again.
You can talk in 10, so.
Yeah, so we're on a time crunch right now. So what we're going to do with this episode is we're going to talk about technical stuff with the RB26, RB25 platform as well. And then we also will talk about GTR Festival, which will be in Texas. And it's the first time you guys are doing this event here in the States, which I'm excited for.
Us
a lot
too.
Of people are excited for it. So let's start with the RB26. I know we spoke the other day and you mentioned to me that if I wanted to build a RB26, you guys have the formula for it. So can you talk about the basics of building an RB26 to make some power?
Look, so people understand, obviously, if you've seen our YouTube channel, my goal has always been that is that every single power point, I try to build the perfect car. So when we went to 400 horsepower, we developed it until that was perfect, 500, 600, 700, 800. Now we're at like 1150, 1200. And when people ask us for advice, I can basically say, if you want to make X power and drive it X way, this is the package. Mm. And obviously Herman had, his own shop and has, you tell them how much experience you've got building them too.
20 years, I guess.
Yeah.
20 years. Yeah. I've watched your videos over the course of, I don't even know, the past 5 years maybe.
Yeah.
And because I've done it and tuned it and set it up and we've done all the racing. It's like, what do I need to make 600 horsepower? Okay, you need that. You need headsets. You need that. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, and that.
Right.
And that's it, So.
Yeah. And for me, the other knowledge that I add into that is I've got my own personal GTR that I can do what I want, play around, experiment with. But luckily enough with Motive Video, I'm around the top GTR builders in the world. So obviously I did engineering in the Air Force. So my brain is, even though I blurt out a lot of things, I also absorb a lot of knowledge, right? I absorb a lot of knowledge from, guys from CID, guys from Tooks, B2R, like every big shop that you can think of. And I'd have to name a lot of them and even engineers in other shops and engine builders and stuff from Herman. I just absorb all of that.
And us. I mean, and we're working with all the big cars. We're making parts for all of them. So
what do you guys consider yourself to be known for though? Just GTRs. Skylines, GTRs?
No, just the RB.
The RB.
He's like RB. I'm more like GTR as a platform and specifically Skyline GTR, but I'm actually a closet Nissan Silvia fanatic that knows a bunch about them.
Closet other things too.
Not to you, it's not.
I forgot to kind of mention that to people who are listening or watching that you guys are like the RB kings, right? So RB platform is huge in Australia. We don't really have too many RBs in the States. So when it comes to
that, RB is the only platform. It's like everyone's a GTR shop. It's the platform that wins every division of every type of racing in every field. It's like you want to go drifting, you want to go drag circuit. It's like it's all RB pro mods. It's all RB.
So why is it that a lot of people don't really talk about it as much as they talk about a 2J in the States?
Well, they do in Australia. They do in Japan. They do in New Zealand. They do in England. They do everywhere but here.
Right.
You guys have had Skyline GDRs floating around in the US for a lot longer than you think. Like Mike from D-Sport magazine, I think he got his 33 in like 99. Sean Morris from Top Ranks had GTRs over here. But the problem is you need enough customers with big money to push the development in racing. So for example, there was enough people with money to push, the Hondas back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and the 2J, and then the R35. Think about how much money it cost to build like the world's quickest R35 and develop that over. So like George Dodson from T1, I can only imagine how much him and Tony have put into that development. And all the 35 shops, AMS and all the other guys at Shop Houston and Joe Tech, but we've done all that there. And that's the problem. There wasn't enough GTRs here and enough customers who have the financial means to push them to kind of make that development worth it. Why would one guy, he would have to spend $1 million to learn what we have, So
Right.
And that's why, and you need the inspiration. Like you watch one of our cars go, you're going to sell everything you own and go buy a Skyline GTR. That's just,
you got to hear it as well.
Yeah, you got to hear it. You got to see it.
I've heard a couple. I mean, they do sound amazing. We have some shops.
Have you heard one live though?
Yeah, I've been in an RB30 drift build And it sounds like, I've never heard anything
I'm
like that.
I'm talking like a 2,000 horsepower.
this is just like 1,000, I think it was. I think it was making 1,000.
Is that all?
I don't know. I mean, well,
my favorite sound in the world is like Extreme GTR or Matty Longhurst, one of those things. Yeah. Racetech GTR doing 300 Ks an hour, which is, I don't know that, what that is in stupid. What do you call it?
186 miles.
We're the communist system, aren't we?
You know how to convert it in your head?
Yeah, yeah. Engineering degree, bro.
Oh, okay.
Screaming down the straight at Eastern Creek.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, wow.
Yeah.
So what is the record for the fastest GTR, not the R35?
It is also quicker than the 35s. The commentators at events here seem to forget very quickly when they say, well, it's quickest GTR. And credit where credit's due to everyone that is on that, you know, that gets mentioned after those words. But the quickest GTR, period, is 637, which is Juntu from Croydon Racing. Robert
Margin.
That's
the R32, right?
Yeah, yeah. And how's this? It's on a 275 all round. It's IRS. The full monocoque is still intact. Lightened panels,
still roof
yes.
And quarters.
Yep. Like it's lightened panels all around. I think the skin of the roof is Kevlar now. But he didn't go like a nose clip front end. And they put a custom interior back in it so that people go, wow, that looks like a street car.
Yeah.
It's a thing in Australia. So it's like quickest all drive. I think it might be quickest 275, quickest IRS car.
It's all wheel drive?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, dude. If you look at it, you just think it's an R32 Skull on GDR. Has a factory wing, for God's sake.
So there is no rear-wheel drive, at least on the launch or anything like that?
It's not a GTR, it's rear-wheel drive,
it's 50-50.
Yeah,
50-50.
And they start dialing it out at the 60-foot, and by the three-quarter track, it may mainly rear-wheel drive, but it's all four-wheel drive.
They play it, because obviously a Tesla system, the way it works, is based on a bunch of inputs. In the factory car, it's the ABS sensors are used to basically detect wheel spin. A G sensor detects longitudinal lateral G force. It has a TPS sensor to determine what you're doing in the corner.
Right.
So the factory system can actually go, okay, you're at part throttle, constant speed, but a lot of lateral G, which means you're mid corner and you're about to accelerate out of a corner. So it actually adds four wheel drive preemptively because it knows you're about to come off a corner. But if you're doing light throttle, no steering input, no G, and are just cruising on the freeway, it's all rear wheel drive because there's no need to put power to the front. So it puts it there as you need to, but then obviously the guys from CID control it through the MoTeC, so they just control the four-wheel drive strategy to suit drag racing. And believe it or not, with Juntu, they can actually essentially have less four-wheel drive on the launch so that you launch more like a two-wheel drive.
Okay.
Like, so it might be like
5%. Because the front wheels are in the air anyway.
Because the front wheels are in the air, man, right?
Squats, right?
But when they come down.
Correct.
And now it's not about squatting cars. There's a new technology where the car needs to create a pizza and unload, but actually drive forward, getting cars off the line faster. But all that aside, when Jordan 2 puts the wheels on the ground, I mean, you want them to grab.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's more forward. So they've actually worked out two-wheel drive, not total two-wheel drive, but like majority two-wheel drive on the initial launch. Mm-hmm. They bring heaps of all-wheel drive back in so that it can hook up in the mid-track, and then they start dialing the front drive back out of it at the top end to basically, you know, because it doesn't need it.
Until you get to circuit, and then it's completely different.
Oh, then circuit's totally different, street's different.
But the adjustability on that is insane. I mean,
so that the GTR is still a champ in other...
Well, Extreme GTR is the time attack record holder, and Juntu is the four-wheel drive drag record holder.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
With the R32.
Yeah,
both 32s.
Yeah. So
32, 33, 34.
Same.
All of them.
Chassis the same.
Chassis the same.
The only real mechanical difference is
one's like a little bit longer.
Yeah, there's a slight wheelbase and track differences. There's, you know, like slight upgrades to the Atessa system or the V-Specs with their active LSD and things like
that. But all that stuff comes out.
All swaps between them. Even the six-speed out of the R34 swaps into the other ones. In fact, while we're here, that is the best modification you can do
it
to an R32.
It is the most expensive modification.
That is expensive. Now, I think I put the price for the roof. If you put the six-speed, which has like 3.5 diff ratio in a 34, which is quite long, when you put it into a 32 or a 33 with 411s, it just wakes the car up and it's just magic.
Right, really? 433s.
Yeah.
It's a little bit better. Short.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the best combo. Like it just changes the car. That's like,
it's
number one.
Change is what we're getting at. But a lot of that stuff gets worked.
Brakes, hubs, suspensions, all swaps. So that 32 to 34 might as well just be like the same.
The same thing. They can all handle high horsepower. Is there any difference in how the chassis is?
Same car.
Oh, look, a 32 is like, I say to people, the 32 is the lightest. But it's the most aggressive and like the one that's going to get out of shape the most. If you want a drag race, technically speaking, the 33 is the most stable due to its track to like wheelbase ratio.
Okay.
It's like it's the most stable one for drag racing.
You're talking that much.
Oh, it's bugger all.
By the time
all,
you end up modifying it, you put your weight wherever you want. I mean, they're fairly far from the original anyway.
So plus, when you're making $2,000 per hour on 630s, I think it's pretty hard to
hang the F on anyway.
Yeah. So.
So what's the record for high horsepower record on RB26
25? Like in an official dyno comp or like any dyno we've heard of?
It's complicated because everything with a high horsepower number at the track is dialed at the track.
Yeah.
It's calculated on, you know, mile and ET and all the rest of it. So, and what it's 60 footing at and all that comes into it, you know. Mm-hmm. But on a dyno,
we've seen 2,500 horsepower, haven't we? 24.
Well, Mac did in the VL.
2,500 horsepower at a dyno comp. That's the first time we've. So last summer, Nats Batuks Racing, Murad with his VL, he's also got Mac 34, one of the quickest 34 GDRs in the world. He basically said, let's put it on the dyno at Summer Nats in actual drag trim. Like don't, because usually they might dyno at 2000 and the track, they start turning it up. There's no need to put everything in for the initial dyno hit, right? So, but they went all of it, gate shut, and it was over 2,500 horsepower, just.
2.5.
And in public, in a hot day, like it was not perfect conditions. We've got the GTR excuse book here.
Wait, was it in the parking lot or something like that?
I was in a shed, at Summer Nats, in a dyno comp. And the side pipe, the actual like exhaust gas coming out, like blew people over in the grandstand. It was so funny. Best video.
But then again, to give an example, that car just ran, I can't remember.
What did it run? 660? I don't know. I can't remember the exact number. We haven't had a lot of sleep.
670?
Yeah, something like that.
Either way, right? Either way, to get a 630 in a four wheel drive car or in a Pro Mod, and it's a factory extreme, but we call them a Pro Mod anyway. Yeah. It's supposed to be a V8, but factory extreme, door slammer type thing, and there's lots of different terminology for it. But in a Pro Mod style car, I mean, you're talking 582, Matuk 584 CID at the moment. It's over 3,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
Damn. Like
over 3,000 horsepower.
So, and we're doing more development to go more. Like it's the guys want to run in the 50s or.
And we're developing this new head because that's sort of what's cracking at the moment.
Mm.
And having a conversation with Rob Marjan, I'm like, how far do you want to go? Well, how hard do you reckon we can go? And I'm like, well, I don't know. This head's got to be able to take 4,500 horsepower, maybe. Or we'll flow it, compound turbo. Like,
yes. We can't get a turbo for it.
How much do you want to go? He goes, if you can give me 5,000 horsepower with that, we'll make it and I'll steer it.
Yeah.
So it's like, where's it going to end up?
We don't know. We just keep going. And luckily, there's enough GTR fanatics and RB fanatics out there that we all work together to keep going. I feel like 2J development has kind of plateaued. Like, I can't remember the last time something revolutionary. And don't get me wrong, all respects, super fast. They've got the record. I get it. Like, mm-hmm. it's no one needs to convince me how good a 2J is. Mm-hmm. But that's not the conversation I'm trying to have, right? The conversation is, where's RB going to end up? And, like, we're pushing going, fast while their developments just seems to...
We're going to have to. I got asked 13 times for a new cast cylinder head for a 2J on the weekend. Yeah. But it's like, we are going to have to do parts for the 2J just so they can keep up with
You watch how many people right now are going, but the 2J is still the quickest. I'm like, yeah, okay, look, outright in like the import world, it is, right? I agree.
Not for long.
The RB guys want to knock it off, and trust me, they're
coming.
They will not stop until it's done.
There's an army. There's an army of Australians, and they're all even working together just to knock the 2J off its pedestal. So.
Yeah.
So how many RBs are in the sixes, you guys think?
Hang on, there's... So Jun 2, are you talking like RB's period or just Skyline GTRs that are still cars?
I would say Skyline, probably Skyline GTRs.
So you've got Jun 2, you've got Punisher, which used to be called Metro, 630, 640s. You've got Pete's R33 GTR, which had CID for the win on it, and then RH6. Aaron Stubbs' car's gone 699. There's even a GDST, ASAF's Bipolar, has gone 640s or low 650s, sorry, long night. And that's in a two-wheel drive GDST that basically has the same combo as the others. Are we missing one? Who else is going sixes?
That's a good amount in the sixes. Usually people say how many cars have gotten to sevens, but I'm saying sixes because it seems like that was a six. You said 6.3?
Yeah.
The record is?
6.37.
Yeah. Right.
Better question is how many cars are getting built for sixes now for GTR Festival?
There's
May?
Four more in the build now where... The people who are building them, when they say I'm building a 6 second Skyline GDR, you go, yeah, I know.
Okay,
like, yeah, it's, yeah, cool. Like, it's, they've already done it. Like, they're doing it again. There's two at CID, there's another one at Matux, and there's another one being built where it's like they're going to run sixes as well. So
do you guys have the R35 there as well in
we
Australia?
Do. We
fixed
got
the
it.
35 by putting an RB in. There's a few of
well,
them.
You mean, right? Oh, you mean actual 35 GTRs? They're popular in Australia. But like I just said before, when it comes to having customers with enough financial means to do it, and I'm not saying that there aren't customers in Australia that have the money to build big powered cars. It's just as a workshop, if you've got 50 customers willing mm-hmm. to build something that costs a couple hundred grand versus three, and that's the same thing over here. That's why T1, AMS and some of those guys, and don't get me wrong, they're all brilliant. That's not the same argument. It's just when you've got enough customers willing to support the program and then you build your own one to support the program, you're always going to end up quicker, which is why RB stuff is ahead. Is the same reason why your VR38 stuff is ahead. Like it's just a direct, and your 2J stuff.
Yeah,
but mind you,
we've caught up with breaking shit.
Yeah. Enough R&D
right.
in it, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So there is 35s there, and I think Croydon Racing Developments and Precision Racing are probably leading the way. Yeah. I mean, there are other shops that do them. I'm not saying they don't, but they're probably leading the way as having the quickest ones, all the ones that basically make over 1,000. There's only a out of, say, if let's say there was 20 of them that make over 1,000, I think 80% of them would be from Precision and Croydon Precision. Together, and probably 70% from Precision Racing.
It's like
so
the RB is the big boys league in Australia. Okay. You know what I mean? So if you're going to build a fast GTR and you want to go and rock the world, it's that.
I think the GTR record is actually not including AMS Jordan's old R35 that CID, a couple of customers CID bought it and went into the 7 straight away. I think there's only two other 35s that have run into the high 7s, and there's plenty in the 8s. Like there's 8-second 35s, that's no worries. Right. I've driven a bunch of them. And but you guys are ahead on 35, and we're catching up now with V10 stuff as well. So that's off track, we're getting there. But like I said, it just takes the time and the amount of customers to kind of get it right. Like you ask me to build you an 800 horsepower 32 GTR, I'll build you one that drives perfect. Like it's the best one you've ever driven in your life if you just follow the recipe. And that's what you guys can do here, right? Like T1 can say, hey, you want that power, you want to do this? This is the recipe, and it's mint. And, I drove an R8 twin turbo from AMS last week. I definitely didn't go over 70 miles an hour, but I can tell you that, to sixth gear, it drove pretty fast and pretty perfect. Yeah. But it's the drivability, it's the complete package, it's finessing it to be perfect. There are guys over here that can build an RB with some power. Yeah. They can put some stuff in a car, but then you drive it and you're like, this is not translating in from the power level into the acceleration or the ability to work. Mm-hmm. It's just not happening. But then you look at some of the cars we build, and I try to do that with my car, is you watch our YouTube channel. I can't fake what our car does. People have seen my 32 GTO go around the circuit with, boost controller off, make an 800, and they're like, that thing's still responsive. And we show driving it on the street. You can't fake that drivability, right? You can't.
Cams are too big still. Yeah.
So there's this big thing that I've heard with the RBs is that you need a head drain in order to make power. There's a lot of oiling, oil starvation issues, and higher RPMs or consumption issues.
Stop putting the oil there in the first place is a good thing. But in top level motorsport, you kind of want oil in the head anyway. But dry sump fixes a lot of issues. But
fixes billet, everything, really. Yeah.
Billet oil pump gears, you can go billet pumps, you can raise the pressure, give the engine more flow, determined by bearing clearance. But at the end of the day, if you don't have enough sump, you run out of oil, and that's a bigger problem.
Yeah.
So bigger sump.
You have to.
Well, you need more capacity because you're pumping more oil.
Right.
That's where people get it wrong.
And if you're going to rev it harder and rev it quicker, you're going to evacuate the sump faster. You're going to fill up your engine, your cam covers, and then there's no oil down the bottom.
You know what's funny? I thought about that, but then I don't know. I feel like people have shied away from that.
Like we did the stock bottom end thing for 5 years, right? Went into the 9s. Everyone's like, oh my God, why are you having all these problems? I go, because it's stock pump. The stock pump doesn't empty the sump as quick, but then you upgrade the pump to a high volume pump. Now you're emptying the sump. But ask yourself this, the oil pump doesn't know how much boost you're running. It just knows what RPM you're running. So if you're at part throttle on a circuit, especially, this is really bad. If you're at part throttle, 4,000 RPM, it's pumping everything it can pump. You got all this oil going to the head, right? And you're on part throttle and all this oil is going to the head. It's not coming back fast enough. Right. What happens when you then stand on it, get a little bit of blow by, all that oil that's already in the head now wants to come out of the breathers. That's why I tell people you need an 8-liter catch can with a drain to sump. Everyone goes, oh my God, there's something wrong with the car. I go, no, there's not. Because as soon as you get off the throttle and on the brakes or whatever else and the RPM goes down, it drains back into the sump and then you're good. And people then go, oh, but it's that's all the ethanol stuff. I'm like, man, all that stuff you see in a catch can from running ethanol, that's just condensation. And
it's a byproduct of combustion.
Yeah.
So you're going to get water in your fuel, in your oil anyway.
Yeah.
But you let it separate. And I always do the drain a little bit off the bottom so that the water sinks because it's denser. And then at the end of the day or whatever, you drain the water out. When you start seeing oil, put the cap back on and you're good to go.
So you don't need a head drain.
You do. What it do you all helps.
It all, everything a little bit helps. So could you run the car without it? Yep. And
up to how much horsepower?
I don't
think it's not about that. It's more about RPM and how quickly it gets there because you're flinging oil. But I mean, our new cam covers have fixed a lot of that. You can go now to a 3-liter catch can and you'll get away with it because we baffle the crap out of it. But if you're not going to do that and you have a baffling issue, then yeah, you're going to push oil.
It's just, it's like there's five or six things that you've got to do to combat oil. And if you miss one, like it could then reduce the overall effectiveness, but you might not notice because of your, I don't know, like it's, I have a way that I always say to do it, and the step-by-step process. If you upgrade to a high-flow pump, you've got to have the biggest sump so you don't empty it. Then you've got to have the restrictor to the head because there's too much oil there. Then you've got to have the PRP cam covers with the baffles, so trying to stop more getting pushed out. Then you did the catch can with the return and the head drain. And I'm like, if you do all of that, it solves it. Unless you've got a high-end circuit car, then you have to go dry sump at the end.
Right, right.
And so, and if you go around to like Eastern Creek Turn 1, for example, if you're sitting at 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 RPM the whole way down the straight and all of your oil is not in the sump and you hook into turn one and open throttle at 6,000 or 7,000 RPM, you just lunched a bearing.
Because you've had like 15 seconds of your lap where you haven't got off the throttle enough for the oil to drain out of the head.
And the oil goes sideways up the sump and the pickup's in the middle, you're done.
Yeah, dry sump is the way. Don't get me wrong, there are some very complicated wet sump systems the Group A cars did to combat this, but they were making like
600 horsepower.
We're talking, you know, like that's...
We're circuit racing with double that.
Yeah. Time Attack GDRs on like 1,100 horsepower.
What?
And some change.
And some change.
And on the final lap with 50 pounds of boost. Probably more like 30, 50.
Right? That is crazy. So it's more of an RPM issue than a horsepower.
Well, the horsepower gets the RPM...
Right.
To move faster.
Yeah.
Right. So if you get there faster, you've got that issue. And it's also revving harder. But yeah.
It is actually more up. You're right. It's if you had two engines that rev to 10,000 and one makes 600 and one makes 800, you're going to have the exact same problems. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's, but like he said, RPM comes from building a bigger setup.
Okay. So let's say right now I wanted to build a 8-second RB. What would you guys recommend in terms of parts and performance?
Copy my car.
Copy your car.
Goes 860 at 165, gun just barrel straight and perfect. Just copy me. And I say that with going back to what I said about making it perfect every step. I have had so many people copy the various combinations we've done and they message me or come up to me and go, I copied the stock bottom in build. And
I start from the back. Right? So you need a diff that'll hold it because the R200 doesn't. So there's a billet R200 coming out that we're doing or an 8.8 into a R200 or an 8.8 or a 9-inch or a 4-link. Any of that sort of stuff. And then a gearbox. Do you want to go auto or manual? Most
sequential
people...
is a manual, by the way. You guys listen to that? All right? All you people that say sequential is manual? You guys, everyone listening, especially you, Cletus and Fred from 1320, a sequential is a manual. You've got a lockout shifter on your H pattern and a strain gauge and all that crap. It's the same, all right?
I agree. See? Next, you're going to say that DCT is an auto, though.
It's a DCT is a DCT.
Wait, so can you explain more about that part? What you
mean? Look, a bunch of people say that sequentials aren't manual because you can't miss a gear. And I'm like, but the inside of the gearbox has an input shaft, an output shaft, dog gears, teeth, a clutch, a clutch pedal. The only difference is the direction of that shift, right?
Right.
Now, if you're not smart enough to get a sequential, that's your problem.
Or wealthy enough.
But when you've got a H pattern that has a lockout shifter and has a strain gauge for flat shift, what's the difference? You can't miss a gear with a lockout and you have a strain gauge for flat shift. You've probably got a slider clutch too. It's like, I get H pattern synchro, no lockout is a different thing. I get that. That's fine.
But then how about if you go paddle?
I think it's still actually, in our category, technically, it's still a manual the box in there is still a manual. You launch off the clutch. You're just doing that. And the reason some do that is you don't want to take your hands off the wheel with 1,700 horsepower in a Skyline. So.
But then if you're running DCT on paddle, what's the difference?
No clutch pedal to take off.
So it's basically however you shift, if the transmission remains as a manual, however you shift doesn't change it.
Input shaft, output shaft,
What clutch, if it's a quick drive pedal. on a G5?
Are you on my side or what?
Not usually. No,
he's just playing devil's advocate. Yeah.
The end, all right?
I was okay, interesting.
But the gearbox is everything in a GTR. It's like the one centerpiece that everyone does last instead of first. So they build a big engine, they do the deal, they can do everything, and it's like, oh, what gearbox? I'm like, you got to choose auto or a dog box H pattern or a sequential, and that like determines your life path. Like, I'm a sequential guy. I don't know why I'm putting an auto in one. If someone goes, here, can you please try this for the channel, and we work together on technical stuff, right?
Right.
I'm not going to go out and buy one. It's just not going to happen, right? I'm not like pulling money out of my wallet to buy an automatic
anyway, Talkins, we're moving on. No, right? So you start open. From the back,
yeah.
Right? So first is
manual.
Rear end, how are you going to get the power to it? Gearbox, how are you going to stop this thing? Does it need to stop? Are you going to run a parachute or brakes, conventional stopping?
Yeah.
You know, and then once we got that safety stuff out of the way and how we're going to shift it and get the power to the ground, then you've got the engine. What are you going to do? The engine, 800 horsepower. We do agree on this. 800 horsepower is the nicest street car that you'll drive.
And yeah, whenever, perfect.
And whenever we, well, whenever you go, or when we went over 800, you go from an everyday driver to a, this isn't so much fun anymore, because 1,200 horsepower, I mean, it gets wild. You hit a little bump.
It's fun when you use it properly. It's just...
On the street, not so much fun.
Is it too aggressive? Or
it comes like a freight train, man. A GTR just, with a 1,200 horsepower, it's a handful.
Yeah, it's wild. Like 800 is, I can use it anywhere, anytime,
right.
Responsive enough. But once you, it's like a 1,700 horsepower Lambo. Like you, even though they drive me, it's like, when are you using 1,700 horsepower? You're looking around going, have I got 600 meters to make sure I can accelerate then stop again? Have I got enough room left to right that I don't run into something? Like, you've got to choose where you give it a hit. But 800 is like, man, you can just have fun with it. You can do a mountain run. You can, it's the ultimate all-rounder.
And 800, you get all the choices. You can still go RB26 on a stock crank. You can go RB28 on a stroker. Yeah. You can go 3 litre, 3.2. They'll all make 800 horsepower. The drivability changes.
And I've done all that.
And you can have an argument which one's more fun to drive. Yeah. I like the sound and I like the RPM. He wants the grunt and he likes the stroker. So
you said you like the stroking.
You love the stroking. Oh,
yes, man.
You invented stroking.
Your ego.
That's good. Oh, my God.
But at the end of the day, 800's fun and it's easy to get there in an RB. And oiling, you got to get the air into the engine somehow. So mm-hmm. pick a turbo, whether it's a Garrett Precision or whatever. Mm-hmm. RTEC manifold, they just bolt up. It's
perfect
easy.
Combo. RTEC manifold G35-900 is like my gun.
Or a little choice. Precision 64, 66. Yeah. I mean, that 900 horsepower. The intake plenum, anything works.
Stock works.
You know,
stock.
But a Hypertune or a Plasma Man, they look nice.
Yeah.
You know, those, I've
there's
seen
some forged carbon ones coming out from RTEC. Look amazing, individual throttle body type thing, or whatever. I mean, you've got all those options, but just get the air into the engine. Then you just need fuel, and I don't have to tell you anything about that. Bigger injectors and a pump, and away you go. And then cams need to flow it. Port work, 800 horsepower, you can do it with no port work, but, and this argument comes up a lot, do you need port work to make power? No, you can jam it in.
Oh, yeah.
Your turbo will jam it in, but it's about efficiency. So... Mm. And that's a whole new conversation, right? But a little bit of light port work, cams, you relieve the combustion chamber. And this is another argument. The squish pads, you leave them in under 800 horsepower. You take them out over 800 horsepower.
The wet pads?
The squish pads.
What is that?
Or the quench pads. It's quench like pads. The edge around the cylinder head where it's like it's flat before it goes up into the dome.
Okay.
That flat part on each side, everyone always argues, do you leave them or take them out? Some people just like smooth off the edge of it because it becomes a detonation point.
The RB is not an efficient head.
No.
When it comes down to it, when we're talking big power.
Okay.
So it won't take timing unless you take them out. Our new design is a clover leaf. It's more efficient. It's more up to date. It's a different science, right? But for anyone else, just under or over, that's the answer. And you don't relieve it, you lay it back. Like that's enough. And then that's it. The head's flowing. Decent valve train, you know. Yeah. Buy something decent. I'm not going to spell out brands because there's so many of them.
There's plenty that work.
Yeah.
They do love camshaft though.
You can run Supertech, Ferrero, there's Manly, whatever. Kilford. You just buy a Kilford kit and it works because they've had so much experience with the RB. We work closely with them. But, you know, cams, right? That's a whole other conversation. Put a set of cam gears on it because they work, apparently.
I got a thing about this. You ready? Herman's like, I'm setting you up. All right, here's a golden rule. If you go to a tuner and say, even if it's just like stock cams or it's drop-ins, right? The big stuff is different because you dial that. But like drop-in and stock, if you go to a tuner and say, I want to do adjustable cam gears on my RB26, and they say, you don't need them, you run out of that shop and never talk to them again because they don't know
they've never adjusted them.
They make a huge difference even on dead stock camshafts with just an exhaust and intake. Like they
even unopened engines.
Yeah. Adjustable cam gears.
But as soon as you machine a head or change a head gasket or change a piston, I mean, you're changing all that anyway.
Yeah.
So you do need to adjust your cams. But all that aside, it'll make the 800 with or without them, sure. Mm-hmm. And a bottom end's just got to hold together. How long it'll do that for, that's another conversation. But it's making the power.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it. Give it an ECU that'll control it all. And here's another one. Don't pick your ECU, ever.
No.
Pick your tuner.
Ooh.
The tuner picks the ECU.
We say that every day, don't we?
Yeah, because you don't go to a Motec tuner and ask him to fit a Haltech. He'll throw it at you. You don't go to a Haltech tuner and say, can you do a Motec? He'll go, what the hell's this? It's just you go to someone that's comfortable with what he's using and he knows he can get you that result every and day. You go with that.
And give it a huge camshaft. Don't be shy.
Not we so have, big. Don't put 320s
well, in there. Well, not 320s, but like people go to me, oh, 272s, that's like too big for a stock head. I go, no, it's not. RB26s don't work below 4,000 RPM, so don't try and make it do that.
The bigger the stroke, the bigger the cam, and always bigger on the exhaust cam.
Yep.
But don't be afraid of compression. It's limited by what the block's going to hold. Yeah. But engines like comp, you know, 9-1, 9.5, 10-1, nice.
Yeah.
But watch out where the power comes in, because if the torque curve comes on too early and you're making, you know, over 1,000 Newton meters at 4,500 RPM, you're going to crack the block or the head or both. And there's just stuff like that, you know. Don't be afraid of timing, but don't overtime a big stroked engine, you know.
Yeah. So they crush bearings too. So
really.
And not enough timing can do more damage than too much timing.
Yeah.
So you got to, because you're increasing cylinder pressure. Mm.
So the big thing with crushing bearings is when people say, I want to try and make peak torque at 3,300. I'm like, no, don't even bother trying to make it below 4.5. So with the stroke of that engine, it labors. So even though you might have full boost, it's by some stupid size turbo that's choking it up top.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, I've got full boost at 3,400. And then regardless of the power level, it just labors the engine, crushes a bearing, and you go, what did I do wrong? These RBs suck. No, you suck. You can't tune them properly, right? So we just see that.
Go buy JZ.
They go, I'm going to buy JZ. That's easy. But we tune my cars from when it was stock bottom end, 2.6 built engine with 9,500 RPM or even 3.2. We always tune the torque curve to make it so that it doesn't actually get to develop peak torque where it would naturally do it. We always push it back, smooth out the boost curve, more linear power, so it doesn't crush bearing. You stop trying to make power at $3,000.
That's one of those old Jap turbos that come on, you know, incept never.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't hurt engines.
They didn't hurt engines.
6,000 RPM, they start spooling. You're never going to hurt an engine.
The bigger the turbo, the more reliable an RB is. It's so, like, when you have a stock bottom end, it's more reliable when you have, like, a G35-1050 with a 1.2 rear on it, or even a, I've seen 68-70s on stock bottom ends with a nice big rear housing and big wheel, and they last longer because they just don't have the low-down torque. They all break with torque below $5,000. That's where they break. You got to use them up top where they love it.
And they lift the head.
Yeah.
And anything does.
Mid-range torque lifts the head on them. I did that in mine where I got greedy at the track. And I added some more mid-range boost just to try and get the short track a little bit better. Yeah. And it just lifted. But we're talking like 1150, 1170 here. We're not talking, well, we're already in firing territory at that power, right? I knew I was on the edge. So, but I, you know, did it. You got to try it, right? So
this is actually really good information. Are you guys taking notes out there? Like, this is like gems right
actually,
here.
Actually, a guy came over and goes, what's the combo? I'm like, give me your phone.
Yeah.
There you go.
So what about the transmission?
Sequential is king. turbo 400 or sequential is your like your
well you path. Don't want to well let's say if you wanted to like you know daily drive the car
look the factory five speed believe it or not is quite strong in first gear like you can launch it all day people go oh I'm too scared to brake I go no
until
250
you get,
launches
you get
day.
To third
yeah
700 horsepower yep. 750 yep. you're done
so okay. It takes a fair bit of power to brake third gear on a roll-on but you can brake them with less power if you're just too ham-fisted
especially if it's cold
which transmission are we talking about
five speed, the factory five speed. Okay. But we've seen 990 I've seen 970 on a stock transmission in Australia. I think a guy over here went even quicker, but he had like a slipper and all that sort of stuff. And I've seen like, you know, right into the nines, but you've got to be really careful.
So. Anyway, then you go to a sequential box.
Or a jet drag first if you can afford it.
Well, yeah, but it's just the same
expensive.
Sort of money anyway.
The best.
But they'll take 1,000 horsepower. Yeah,
they'll take 1,000.
Yeah.
They don't like high RPM shifts, the jet drags, so much when they're a bit older. And
you'll be putting synchros in them, but they do take 1,000 horsepower. Yeah. And then you've got the sequentials. PPG, Albans, Samsonis. I mean, you take a bit, HGT.
There's Hollinger, there's always geeking. All those heaps, yeah.
But you're spending 35 grand Aussie, 23 US.
By the time it's in, done, set up, clutch,
plus
et
a clutch.
Yeah.
Plus a clutch.
Direct clutch.
Plus a shifter if you're using a clutchless shift load cell type thing.
Some come with it, some don't. So.
Okay.
Someone really needs to make a billet ZF8.
Someone needs to make a 6-speed synchro replacement for Getrag. Getrag. Someone needs to make
that.
You
need a German to say
GTR. You need a 6-speed in a GTR. You really do. They're just.
So you need a 6-speed.
I'll keep saying it 50 times in the podcast. Yeah. It's so good. Like once you've driven a Getrag or a sequential 6-speed, where fifth is 1-to-1.
But then again, I like a loud gearbox.
Yeah.
Because I want to feel like I'm driving a race car on the street. And a lot of people do.
Well, they're straight cut, helical cut. PPG's helical cut, and then some of the boxes are straight cut. Straight cut is like, it's going to go racing. It's going to be noisy.
It's a loud box.
It's a loud box.
But and Albans is a loud box, but I love them.
It's race car.
Samsonis is a loud box, but I love them.
You know, I've driven every one of them.
PPG, they're all good.
Yeah. People say compare them. I go, no, because I'm going to upset someone somewhere. They're all, you know what? They're actually all pretty good.
You said Turbo 400, right?
Yep.
Are the fastest cars in the world are running TH400?
All of them. All TH400.
All Turbo 400.
Until every you get in the Pro Mod territory.
And even then, some of them still do, but a lot of them have now. Yeah. Like the guys that are now on it aren't. Some Pro Mod guys have actually gone back to Turbo 400 for quicker turnaround, but the RB guys are, no, they're...
Oh, and then there's a Power Glide. I mean, cheapest box in the world.
Yeah.
It's 15 grand with our conversion kit, and you're running sevens. You know what I mean? Like, it's an awesome box, and it is the most affordable box. Turbo 400s, they take a long time to get built.
Waiting list.
Dealing with anyone in America has been tricky for us, which is why we stopped offering Turbo 400s.
Yeah.
But it's an issue. There is a hole in the market for something there. I'm not saying we're working on something, but I'm saying we're working on something.
I want to try that HP. I want to try the ZF box behind it. I'm actually excited to try it just because if you can get the launch of the auto.
Imagine if it was purple.
Launch of the auto, but then a lockup makes it shift like a
DCT.
And
you don't
DCT,
even need to run a torque converter on those things.
No,
you can pull it out.
So why hasn't it been done yet?
It has. People are doing it now. Yeah,
eight speed in Queensland.
Yeah, they've done it.
They've done it, and they sell the kits. They're an awesome kit.
Yeah, I want to try it. I want to put it in one of my Gold 33. I want to try it in.
Interesting, but that's an auto.
Yeah,
technically.
Yeah, whatever. Technically.
It's also you can have a sequential shift or a paddle shift.
You can do sequential with the ZF8?
You can do like a video game controller and it will let you operate.
To me, it's a sequential, but without the clutch.
No, it's an auto. Sorry, man, it's an auto.
Interesting. I was going to say, because I have a ZF8.
Yeah, you can do an electronic like clutch pedal too.
Electronic?
Yeah, you can say, hey, I want a clutch pedal, and it's like electronic clutch pedal. You can basically take like a gaming rig, like clutch pedal and gear lever and everything when you're using those boxes and just program it.
I did not know that.
Adam LZ did it in the Supra where he actually...
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
where it had a clutch pedal and it disengaged a box, could be drifted and have a hydraulic handbrake and have a sequential lever and everything.
So a lot of people upgrade to the RB30 block. It's the most common one people use when they want to make high horsepower. Do you guys recommend that? Do you guys recommend running a stroker as well with the RB30?
Look, it's all... RB30, you have to run a stroker
because
you can't put a 26 crank. Well, technically you can put a 26 crank in it, but...
It doesn't work.
It defeats the purpose.
Mm.
Standard blocks, they all crack at some point. So it's only a matter of time. And we only ever... And a lot of people don't know this, but we only started testing blocks just to get... to know them well enough and doing all our features because we were developing our new block in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So now that the block is so close, we've pretty well discontinued. I've got probably 100 RB30 blocks there and we're just not interested in processing them. It's too much work. We never made money out of any of that. We used to machine the crap out of them and spend half a day tidying them up just to sell a brace. But now it's like, you know what? Let's park all that. The new block's coming. Let me tell you about that quickly. And people say, you know, have you strengthened it? Well, yeah, of course we strengthened it. Mm. We've done everything that we know needed to be upgraded in that block. But we've also now started working on a new crank for it for a 3-liter to rotate in the RB26 short deck. But we've raised the deck by 2 millimeters to put the gudgeon offset in the right spot so we can not have a gudgeon pin and a piston ring being in the same place. And then you're not running buttons and you're not trying to, you know, do a screw apart piece of great idea with HKS, but we're trying to avoid that. And we're trying to get the conrod ratio to a sweet spot where you can rev it like an RB26, because the bigger the stroke, usually the worse the conrod ratio, it doesn't want to rev. So what we wanted to do was have the RPM, rev, and sound of an RB26 or an 8, but as a 3 litre. So we've done a 90 mil piston. It's a just over a 3 litre, but it's going to rev like hell, and that works. Coupled up with our 90 millimeter head in our R1 packages, we're starting to talk, hang on, this is a really high revving, high capacity, high torque RB30, and you don't have to go and modify any of your pipework because the block's pretty well in the same spot. You can lower the block on the stands by, on the engine mounts by 2 millimeters, and everything pretty well will line up. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the aim. And what's the, you know, what can we take these horse, you know, the horsepower rating to on these blocks? Well, 1500s out of the box, and then we're going to go to an integrated main cap brace, 2-bolt version, 2000 horsepower, and then we're going to go for a 4-bolt main with 3000 horsepower capability, and we'll do some dyno testing and see where it all lands. But I mean, it's happening as fast as we can make it happen.
The good thing is because we did all that video work in the early days of showing people what's wrong with the blocks.
Right, right.
At least now it's easy to say, hey, we already showed you what's wrong. Yeah. Now we fixed it. So Siamese bore means huge bore thickness. They'll get rid of the bore thickness problem. The drain back on the outside at the back with the oil is, it's way bigger to try and get oil back down faster. Right.
More material around the head bolts.
Yeah, more material around the head bolts. The deck's thicker so it doesn't crack. Deck's like thicker. So everything I've broken on those blocks is fixed. Which, like he said, with the RB30, I did an RB30 swap to kind of show people what you've really got to do.
Yeah.
It's not actually easy. Not that simple. Like, there's a lot of little things that stuff you up when you go to do it that you just don't realize. You think, I dropped subframe 30 or whatever, but there's a lot of little things.
More importantly, it's, we're trying to release a block that you just hone to your piston size.
Right.
And build it. Main tunnel should come cut and perfect. The deck's done. It's all. It should be pre-machined is our aim, which is why I'm spending so much money and effort to try and get these off a high volume assembly or production line as a finished block. So you can just get a block and you can hone it yourself because anyone's got a hone and get that thing running the next day. It's you're not waiting for a machinist for a year, which is a big problem here because tunnels are hard to cut. Thrusts are hard to cut because it's right in the middle of the block. Mm-hmm. So you need special tooling to get to the thrust. And even in Australia, I mean, all the machine shops are backed up. Machine shops should be there to repair, you know, blocks that have broken and whatever. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of work around. But yeah, if you can get a block and put it together, that eliminates a lot of problem. And a lot of people getting upset with their engine or their tuning shop waiting for a year to get a block machine just so they can put it together. It's like, we want people to have it quickly so they can go race their mates, break it, break the whatever, and just, you know, be able to service the thing. Have some fun, get out and rolling and racing again the next day or the next week or whatever it is, and make it competitive and make it fun again.
And you can't find a brand new Nissan block.
Or head.
Or head. I've got a brand new head sitting hidden away. It's like it's in my safe instead of money because it's more likely to get stolen than cash. Like it's
right.
You, and a brand new N1 block.
You can't steal a head.
Good luck. Like you just, and they're not making any more at the moment. There's a stop and thing, and I've heard from, you know, people I know within Nismo and Nissan or whatever, that heritage program of making more blocks, they've stopped. So where are you going to get
the
new
blocks? Aren't awesome.
And they're not good anyway.
Because you heat them up a couple of times and the decks warp and they're no good.
But I'd rather a second-hand block,
for a 400 horsepower build, sure, but for everything else, it's problematic. And you still have to put a brace on it and you still have to machine it and you still have to do the tunnels and you still have to blah, 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 blah. By the time you finish, it's 13 grand Aussie block.
2Js are sounding pretty good right now, aren't they?
So how much is this going to cost?
Well, 8,000, call it 5.5 grand for a base model US, you know, eight and a half grand Aussie.
That's not bad.
And the just cylinder heads, you know, we're talking built packages for 1,000 horsepower for 10 grand, you know, 4,000 horsepower capable for 15, 16 grand built. It's like, it's not a lot of, and that's all Australian dollars, right? Yeah. So go $6,000 for a head. It's not bad.
The head on my car, like if I bought a brand new Nissan, it's 20K.
That's right. Bare head, we're doing $6,000 Aussie. So you're talking $3,500 US for a bare head.
Yeah.
Machine just like OEM, but you don't have to do the valve release, the cam release for the lobes. Mm. You know, the simple stuff's already done and they're already clearanced and machined. You can go and do your own port work. There's guys like, you know, Head Games Motorworks and JHH and whoever, they do their own stuff.
Yeah.
Cool, we respect that. Go and port the crap out of it. There's the parameters.
Right.
Go nuts. Have your own port program. But the valve seats and everything cut, everything tipped the right size. It's all set and you can just build it and have one shimmed bucket. I mean, that's the goal. Mm. You can sort it out quickly.
Pay $5,500 for a factory brand new head right now. So this will literally be the same price as a brand new head from this. If you can even find one.
And most of the work's done for you, if not all.
Without the cons of running a stock.
Yeah, because we fixed all the problems.
Yep. Right.
My head was like, if you wanted to build the head I have, including buying a head, it'd be nearly 20K. Damn, like from 20K. The entire head with everything in it, all the work
and
done.
And I worked out to go for our R1 Pro package, which won't be allowed. We're not going to sell it to anyone. You need to prove you're making 2,500 horsepower before we'll even look at selling it to you.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to be inefficient. And you're going, oh, I put the R1 head on my car, lost 200 horsepower. It's going to happen. But I mean, we've gone all out with that thing. Yeah. It's running a 37, maybe 37 and a half mil intake valve. I mean, it's 4 millimeters bigger than standard. The buckets are 35 mil GTR 35 buckets. They're deal seal coated. They're cheap. It's off the shelf. It's a Subaru valve. You know, it just, it all works. It's off the shelf.
Yeah.
And it's available because GTR stuff.
Can you hurry up? You're making me want one right now. Everyone keeps messaging me on my channel. When are you testing PFP blocks? When are you testing PFP head? I'm like, let's go.
As soon as I can get one.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. People don't realize.
My biggest problem at the moment, I've got one head to test and we either give it to Croydon or Matoux. Or we set up a boxing ring and put one head in the middle and say, go.
Yeah. And the blocks, like we got to test, like Herman was saying with the two blocks that exist right now, is you have to test what temperature you cast them at, the cooling pace, how long you cool them for, et cetera. Like we won't know the perfect result until we've, how many do you reckon you're going to cast before you're like, okay, that's it, probably 10, 8, 10, maybe more before you go, that's how we cast
the
it.
The second one was a hell of a lot better than the first.
Yeah.
Got some good guys working on it. But I'd say by the third or fourth, we'll be in full production, which is happening quickly.
Yeah.
Like as quickly as I can.
So will it happen before a GTR festival?
I'm talking we'll have one in testing in 3 weeks.
So. What?
Potentially, yeah.
That is all going well.
Mm. All going well. They are GTRs, remember, though.
You said what?
They are GTRs. Not everything goes perfect 100% of the time. Right. We all know this, right?
No, 100%. 100%. So you guys have GTR festival coming up in November. Can you talk about that and why you decided to bring it to the States?
What's the real reason? We want to do some spanking.
I mean, it's actually this simple. What, you guys have the American dream and I had the American dream. I did GTR Festival for me was just, I just love GTRs, the end. And I just, it was never about like some business model or whatever. It was just, and you remember, right? Like first GTR Festival 2016 was small, it just grew and grew and grew. I did GTR Challenge at Cootamundra before that. I always said, imagine doing one in the USA, like just pipe dream, like just imagine.
Yeah.
Like, meow, imagine.
Then we started mentioning it to a few people and they go, we'll come. We'll pay our own, we'll take our car there. Can we, you know?
Yeah. And look, last year's TX2K was actually like a reconnaissance mission. I came over, I wanted to check out Texas, Orlando, see where should we have it, meet some more drivers who I've never met in real life. Like, I know of them, they know of me, et cetera, but like actually speak with them, talk to them, explain the idea of our event because it's not a conventional race event. It's a festival with lots of elements to it. The way we run the drag racing is different. It's more about the show. And then when I explained them to all, it was like a refreshing change and they were really excited. And that's when me and him were like, I think we can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, explain there's always something to do. There's a dyno comp, there's a show and shine, there's a this, there's a that. So you boil down. There's entertainment.
There's kids rides and lasers and music and Tybo. Sorry. Been saying that all weekend. But then I was like, okay, what track? And then I'll admit, when TX2K said they're moving from Houston to Texas Motorplex, that made me instantly look there because if it's good enough for TX2K, it's good enough for any major event, right? Like let's face it. Mm-hmm. So then obviously the next step is how do I get a date? So Javier from TRC introduced me to the track and gave me that in that took me from being like, who's this idiot from Australia that thinks he can run an event to, oh wow, you guys are actual event promoter with a very good event in Australia. They checked in on me. They see who I knew. They looked at our social media, our YouTube coverage or everything with our event and kind of went, oh wow, this is in line with what we want to do. And Texas Motorplex been super welcoming. Like, they want to do whatever we want to do as our ideas. They want to learn from us. We want to learn from them. Like, super excited about working with them. And then we got a date and here we are. And a lot of people were surprised. They're like, hey, you were here last year, like telling us your idea. You've got a date, you're booked and you're here with a booth and you're promoting the event.
And we're bringing GDRs.
GDRs. So, and then, that's
and
kind of like
building GDRs building here for that event. That's epic. Yeah, I mean, that happens in Australia
a lot,
but it's like, oh, okay. They're building GDRs for them.
I mean, I had the confidence to think that I had just enough brand power and, like, I guess, like support to do it. But like the amount of people that are coming over a weekend and the people I was talking to was like, Whatever, however you big you think it's going to be, it's going to be bigger. How much support you think you've got more. However many people are, you think are coming, it's more. And I'm like, oh, it's very humbling. Very,
right.
It's nice. It's very, very humbling. And I do truly appreciate that there's so many supporters of our brand and PRP, Modi Video, and all the GDR stuff we've done. And that community just, plus I'm super enthusiastic. Like for me, it's just,
I want a bunch of GDR. I'm passionate. Yeah. We're passionate.
We're passionate, right? And I think people feel that with us. They when they talk
to me. I think you, me and Ben Creswick in a room, it's like all night.
But everyone we talk to, yeah, we do. We're always discussing ideas. Like, you know, 2 a.m, I got an idea for
on
this.
On a Sunday. Yeah. And the wife's like, you get to go to work in a few hours.
Yeah. Can it wait another 4 hours? No. So he needs to know about this now.
We're excited.
But everyone at the track this weekend at TXDK, we're just the overwhelming support we've had for the event is mind-blowing. And I'm just pumped to make this the best event, period. Not just for GDRs, not just for racing. Like, I just want the coolest. I want everyone to have fun with every aspect of it. From you can bring your stock 35 to just, you know, do 12-second pass, 11-second passes in the open lane session of drag racing. Yeah. You can bring your 5-second pro mod to be in the headline act drag racing.
You can and bring JZ to lose.
You can. There's a 2J versus RB Invitational. We're inviting 2Js to come and lose.
What?
Yeah. I've already invited my buddy Ryan.
Yeah.
Sam.
Yeah.
So, oh, we're coming back to Texas.
Didn't you tell Titan, hey, do you guys want to come to GDR Festival to lose?
To lose.
And then DCT class is going to have V10s because, you know, we go to see Lambos. But I'm actually mixing the rules up a little bit. There's no turbo cap. I'm not going to handicap R35s with 58mm restriction. If Lambos can have a 76mm, why can't a 35, right? Yeah. And I get earlier why they did, but times have changed. So,
and turbos now, it's not a real 58. Come on. No, I mean, that's the extrusors, there's...
Yeah,
there's the anti surge slots. So they're it's
turbos are made for it, right?
It's a hole.
So we're gonna have DCT Street, DCT Race, and the whole idea is a DCT Street is a legit street car, factory front brake size, minimum 17s on the back, full interior, working windows, aircon, stereo, registration. You can't have lightened panels other than what bolts on and off, like, you know, bumpers and bonnet.
He's been doing rules enough for Australia.
Yeah,
you know, it works. I mean, try to upset the least amount of people possible.
Well, I did consult with plenty, like Jordan, obviously from, you know, Drive Wire Jordan. Spoke to him. Spoke to Tony from T1. Spoke to Joe Tech. Spoke to Mac from the shop Houston.
Yeah,
I even spoke to about 20 drivers this weekend just to finesse the rules, just to
make everyone happy.
You know what I mean? Like,
you're never going to keep everyone happy, but you know, 90% there is good.
Yeah,
enough, right?
So we're doing that. I mean, we've got all our rules from Australia for the other categories, but like you can bring your, it's open to Nissans too, right? For the car meet and the car show. So you can bring a dead stock 240 or a Pulsar and park inside. Like, think of it that way. We want everyone with a Nissan to celebrate, you know.
Even if it's pinnacle. Got a Toyota engine in it.
Yeah.
So it was mentioned in the podcast before. I think Kev mentioned it before on the podcast that he was going to be bringing a lot of cars there.
Yeah.
That's when I first heard about it. And then we spoke about having, putting the swap in my car. Now, where would I fit if I had a RB swapped Toyota Supra?
You said RB. You're in. Let's go.
RB, let's go.
Or even a Nissan S14 with, you know, a 2J in it or whatever.
If he goes in the RB versus 2J Invitational, does that mean he's racing himself? Because it's a Supra with a...
That's what I'm saying. It's a Mark 5 Supra with the RB swap. Where would I fit?
It sounds like a schizophrenic disorder.
I want that car in RB versus 2J, but in the RB group. So it just confuses everyone. It's like, up now on the RB team.
He's
like,
he's going to punch himself.
Yeah. I don't even know what I'd run at the track. I never ran at the track before, so it'd be pretty cool.
Are we helping with your RB? We'll tell you exactly where to run. I mean, as long as you can drive it. That's.
I don't know how we could figure something out.
There's some big cars getting built for GTR Festival here. Big cars.
Well, I'm not going to be competing with those cars, but
no. But it's, you know, it's all welcome, and it's a festival.
Yeah,
for all Nissan stuff.
You can just run. It's not like a exhibition.
Well, there's two lots, right? There's what we call open lane. Mm-hmm. Is I just want to have fun, right?
Right. That's probably where I'm going to be at.
And then you've got what we call headline categories, which is DCT Street, DCT Race, True Street RH9 for $9.99 and quicker Skyline GDR. You got Super Street GDR, which is the methanol ones, Pro Street, which is the big 6 second ones. Mm-hmm. You got Pro Mod, you got GT, like a Pro Mod category, which is going to probably in conjunction with GTR Extreme. And then you got RB versus 2J. And then there's like what we call the Nissan race car class, which is just the fast Nissans that aren't GDRs. But within those, most of them are actually not elimination categories. They're actually just quickest ET wins the category. It's like, because
that's how we like to race in Australia.
Yeah, because that's those these guys just want to run a number.
Right.
And I hate to say this, as much as I love drag racing, the crowd doesn't go, oh, that guy ran this time in his seventh round of qualifying 2 days ago. Now he's in round. They don't know. Yeah, they just go, I want to see that guy race that guy.
Right.
That's it. And most of the racers have told me that they actually just want to run a number. But when they're in the staging lanes for them to come out, I go, George Dodworth, Robert Margin, your quickest 35, our quickest GTR. Like that's, I'm going to make that happen. I've got guys that want to race me or guys that want to race War GTR or against Matuk. So we make them happen for the crowd, but they still get to win the category by getting the quickest number. And some drag racers go, that's not real drag racing or whatever, but it is. That's what, if that's what the crowd wants and that's what the drivers want, what's the problem, right? DCT will be elimination, RB versus 2J, but that's how we're going to do it. And those headline categories come at a set time. So if you're in the crowd and you're like looking at the drifting or the autocross or the kids rise or the lasers, thanks to George, you can go, oh, I want to watch the 1 o'clock session of the headline categories. Right. And also the racers know they're racing at one. So there's no oil down delays from the 17 categories before them pushing them back. Mm-hmm. So they're in the lanes for 2 hours. They know they can get there at 5 to 1. So
just stop talking.
I'm excited, man. Let me tell
them. So, exhibition races. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that. Someone asked me the other day. What would I like to see at our festival if I get to have a, I don't care about the rules, Andrew, I'm going to have this race. I'm thinking, what are the two favorite cars in the world that I have at the moment? One have to be Jun 2 and the other one would be have to be the RSR Supra. And guess what? They both run a 636, 637.
Will they be there?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We just make it happen. We don't need to wait.
I would like those cars to
race. They're going to be in Texas.
Yeah.
Those cars.
Oh, yeah. We're bringing them all. Ryan's coming from Canada to race his Supra.
Right.
And Australia with Jun.
Yeah.
And although Jun was supposed to be retired, we asked Rob not to retire the car because it's so famous.
They're building a faster, quicker one.
So if they're both running a 630, right, I don't care. One's four-wheel drive, one's two-wheel drive. RB, JZ, it's about one RB racing. The world's fastest RV racing a 6.3-second Supra. It's a pro mod. It's a whatever you want to call it. Yeah. It's a tube chassis car, but they've got the same quarter mile time. That's epic. And I'd be really happy to see it.
Crowd wants it.
Stoked, excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Yeah, you have to go to Australia to see that in person.
We're bringing Jun 2. We're bringing three other 6-second Skyline GDRs. We're going to bring 4 5-second RB powered pro mods, Zeus, the Don. Murad's building one built in Puerto Rico that Matuk's going to send an engine over. There's another pro mod that's secret. We're bringing my car. Mine's the slowest, only 860s, 165, yes. We're going to bring, we're trying to bring War GDR and RHM. Josh Norris from Norrie Factory wants to bring his. Alex Birong's talk. There's Motorsports Mechanical even mentioned that they want to do it. Like there's.
No, they're
once,
coming.
Once there's, we finalize, there's a lot, man.
Because you were saying, oh, you know, with probably 6 or 7 cars. I'm like, mate, there's 20.
Yeah, 20 want to go. It's just, I don't want to tell people 20.
Right.
Just, you know what I mean? Like until it's locked in, I don't like to say exactly this. So if I say, hey, there's 8 to 12 and we get 20, then well.
We might end up with 10. We might end up with 30. Who knows?
Yeah, there's a lot that want to go.
What are the dates for the event?
15th to 17th.
And there would be like a vendor area like how it was.
Oh, yeah, huge traders alley. Huge. Like a lot of vendors want to be part of it. A lot of companies we work with already, people from Australia. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like everything you can think of that can happen at any type of car event, it will happen.
And
it.
Everyone welcome. Yeah. If you want to reach out, you want to trade a stall, you want to support, you want to come, you want to get on board, tickets are live now.
Yeah. Yeah, I can actually buy spectator tickets, VIP tickets right now. Mm-hmm. It's early bird pricing. You can enter into the car show right now and drag racing should be open by the time this video is out because after the event at TXDK, we just wanted to, you know, finalize a couple of things with the track and the races while I'm here. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm happy with, I guess, the rule set that we're going to start with, I mean, it could change over the years. Now I'm ready to open drag racing entries later this week. But early bird just basically means it's like 30%
and
off.
And we want to see 5,000 cars in the car park. I mean, everything. Bring your streeter.
Yeah. Bring everything. I want, thousands of cars in the car meet is what I want.
Will there be roll racing too?
Yep. Friday's roll racing, Saturday, Sunday's drag racing. Every night's a party. drifting demos, drift rides, autocross rally, kids rides. Brooks doing GTR pony rides in a pink GTR and everything. Like
get ready to have fun and not sleep.
Yeah, no sleep allowed. And then Thursday will be like a private test day for the big guys from overseas or whatever. And that'll be setup day, tech, get ready, etc.
Track prepping, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So
hopefully it doesn't rain, Texas. Come on.
Yeah, apparently November's better.
Hopefully not. What if so the tech days will only be for people who are like obviously
entered. Yeah, okay. if you spectators won't be able to come in on Thursday, we might let VIPs in. I'll check. But Thursday is essentially all the workshops, all the traders, everyone can all come set up, get teched, get ready for the next day.
And any new ideas or anything that's happened, it's not a no, it's like, okay, can we work with that?
Yeah.
But we try and make everyone happy.
Yeah, as best we can. There's always someone upset somewhere, but we don't. Like, but if the like, I just want to look
JZ
out.
JZ owners.
Yeah, JZ owners, they want to be happy.
I'm going to get pumped.
You got a bulletproof vest, all right.
Yeah, let's go.
We are in Texas.
Yeah, we are in Texas.
I just want to look out and see lots of happy people, man. Like that's for me, it's what it's all about. I'm a GTR fanatic. I can't even, I have a GTR tattoo, for God's sake. Like it's... That's on my back. So,
oh, yeah. So you're
going to stomach tear my
shirt see it,
off.
Let's see. Oh, you don't want to take your shirt off?
It's really bad.
I'll send a photo.
I'm kidding.
I think we can turn that into a bet.
What's the bet?
Well, I don't know. Let's come
on. Okay, if the event has more than a certain amount of people, I'll get another GTR tattoo on my butt.
Okay, what's the number?
I'm talking like a GTR on your butt. 20,000 people.
20,000
people. Because that's a pipe dream at this
probably
stage.
Probably a pipe dream. It's not unachievable, but it's like
we're sub 10,000 in Australia, and that's massive. I can't imagine 20,000 people, but I'm let's call it 20,000 people, and I'm saying like you can pick the butt cheek, but it's
yeah. A hand. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's a hand.
Okay, so 20,000 people show up to Texas to GTR festival.
Logo or car?
How about
my choice?
You get to choose, okay. But there has to be the GTR logo in there somewhere, and it can be on a car. Done. And if you put your own car on your ass, I'll throw in an extra, I don't know what it is, but you'd have massive wanker status to put your, who would tattoo their own car on their ass? You would. Arrogant wanker. I think we could.
Oh, you've met Andrew Hawkins before.
Yeah, I think we could throw. I think we'd throw in a cherry.
You can't be insulted if you insult yourself first.
I'm like just that. Picturing you with a tattoo of your car on your ass.
I'm gonna have to get a G-string to walk around the event in now.
So whoa!
I'm gonna pay people just to come.
This is gonna make a highlight reel, isn't it? Surely.
This is 20,000. 20,000.
20,000 people turn up. That includes entrance. Everyone like. People that
people
so souls. There you go
20,000 souls. 20,000 that includes souls, puppies.
Yeah. How many people were at Texas 2K you think the event?
I don't want to guess, but
last year I don't know
I don't want to say in case total oh. Yeah, but you got to remember like if you cumulatively add the days or how I don't know how they count.
So 20K.
I'd say Sunday if I like based on how many grandstands
both
hold.
Ass cheeks, the car goes from one ass cheek to the other.
Oh, that could hurt in the middle.
Ooh. There can be an exclusion zone. There can be a Gaza Strip.
So it's like half a GDR and half a GDR.
Yep. And then when you push your butt cheeks together, you get the whole
I'd
car.
Rather just get one GTR on one cheek and one on the other. I got more than one GTR, dude.
There's a lot of territory.
I need four
too.
Butt cheeks.
There's like, there's a lot of real estate.
What? For every 10,000 more people, I've got to get another tattoo.
It's going to get bigger.
I'm going to come back 4 years later, like pow, sleeve, like just whole body tattoo.
Let's bet Hawkins another tattoo.
That's actually how my first GTR tattoo actually was like a thing where if GDR Festival in Australia grew beyond a certain point, yeah. I could get it. And then I did.
I probably got my
Susie was there with me actually. We actually went to a tattoo expo and some guy yelled out, "Hey Andrew." Yes.
I gotta go.
You gotta go?
I'll let you guys talk. All right. No doubt.
All right. I'm camera shy, man.
Yeah, bro.
Well, Herman's gotta catch his flight.
Is anything inside?
Thanks very
the
much,
car,
guys.
It's been real. Thank been you.
Pleasure.
I appreciate
anything
you.
Inside the car,
just in the back.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, in the back. All right. Cool. See you guys.
Later. Later. Safe flight. Safe flight, man.
Now I could talk about him.
So Herman has left. So now it's just Andrew. It's just you and I, my friend, you and I. Let's talk about some stuff that we mentioned before with when it comes to big misconceptions in America and how Australia does things a bit differently. I'm not sure if you meant by cars or what, but I would love to hear your take on that.
I think America, obviously, it's a big country. They do a lot of things really well. But I think some people kind of keep the blinkers on and don't look at what other people are doing. It's almost like you tell people what we're doing in Australia and it doesn't register that it's real.
Okay.
And it's and then when the people that do kind of catch on are like, whoa, you guys are doing that. Like we've not just RBs, we've held records in drag racing and time attack and all sorts of things in multiple different categories. We've got a very, very, like a lot of very smart people in Australia, very determined to do well. 27 million people and we do well at everything we do. It's just Aussie culture is we have to, punch on with people with population, right, 10 times the size and do well in anything we do. So right, that's one misconception I think we see over here. Once people sort of open their eyes to what we're doing and realize, oh, wow, like people outside of here can do things, that's when they sort of go down the rabbit hole and start seeing how we do things with RBs and other cars over there and, yeah, and kind of realize, oh, wow, you can do this. And that's what I'm hoping with GDR Festival is, if you see like, you know, RHM and War GDR do a run down the track side by side, people are just going to lose their minds. They're just going to go, I sell everything now. I want a GTR. Like,
yeah.
Because if you see a bunch of ones built badly here and your experience is only laggy or doesn't drive good or isn't actually that fast or because the combo's not right,
right,
people then go, oh, they're overrated. They're not that good. Well, mm-hmm, you can't tell me a GTR's overrated. Come in mine. Like, you'll find out what underrated is in your mind. Like, it's... But like any car, you can ruin any car. You can ruin an EG Civic. Yeah. You can ruin an... Like, some cars are harder than others to ruin, but you can ruin any car to drive like shit, right? Like, you can. But if you get it right, a Skyline GTR is probably still the most rewarding car to drive. If it's built right and driven right from point A to point B, not only is it extremely rapid, it is so much fun. And the noises, the feeling is just... And that's where people get it wrong. And I've seen GTRs built over here where they've got 1,000 horsepower dynograph. Some of them are a bit more unicorn dynos than others. Mm-hmm. I won't mention any names. But then they have a stock gearbox or it's got a turbo that's wrong size for that engine because they don't know how to size a turbo for an RB, because you don't size a turbo for an RB the same way you size it for a lower revving engine. They're very different. RBs have so much exhaust gas at 9,000 RPM. You need a much bigger turbine housing than you think. So all the turbos you see in Australia, the compressor is smaller than the exhaust.
Okay.
So like, I use a G45 1500. Now, a G42 1450 is a terrible turbo on an RB. Great turbo on 4G, Barra, etc. But on a 26, because the front the compressor is so much bigger than the exhaust, that the exhaust runs out of flow before the compressor. But then you put a G45 1500 on, exhaust side is bigger, it's like a 7681, right? And brilliant, amazing turbo. Like, it's just a gun turbo. Everyone who goes in my car loses their mind. And 7685, 6870, you know, 8385. You always see the exhaust side is bigger than the front. It doesn't matter so much on like a G35 frame turbo, and it's less of a problem on, say, a 26 versus a 3.2, because as capacity goes up, that problem gets worse, because people don't understand this concept that if you have a 2.6 and a 3.2 and the same turbo, when you switch them, the boost pressure goes down on the 3.2 for the same amount of airflow, but the back pressure ain't going to change because everything in the exhaust side is the same, right?
Right.
So now you've got less boost pressure but the same back pressure. So your ratio of boost pressure to back pressure now changes and changes the efficiency of the engine. So when I went from 2.6 to 3.2, the engine actually wasn't capable of more power. It actually lost power potential.
Right.
But it was more drivable, more torque, more bottom end, etc. So turbo sizing is probably a big thing they get wrong in the US. And the other thing they get wrong is the tuning side of it, with laboring the engine, trying to have too much boost and torque down low, not trying to get the power curve right. If they hit too hard, they don't drive as good. They don't put the power down as good. You want to smooth the power curve out, get the timing, get the boost out of that sort of bottom end. Stop trying to make it a modern engine, because it's not. It's old.
Yeah.
They're two things I think are done really wrong here. And just, we've done videos on how to control the oiling system, and people carry on that it's too hard. I'm like, just follow the recipe. It's fine. And, you know, I've helped Adam LZ build his car. Like, I consulted with him and sort of like, you know, talk about the package and helped out. TRC, myself and Herman have liaised with Javier and sort of like things to do to finesse it. We, me and Rob Arbolino built Mickey from Throttle's R32 GTR for that Bang & Gears TV show. Mm-hmm. Built it in 3 weeks. And it went out. We rocked up to Bang & Gears. Lee Bird was there. He'll tell you, we just ran out, bam. Like, just like a car was out of the box. Like, just base setting. My base setting in the car, the thing was fast. When that show comes out, people are just going to, 3 week build. And it was like, you know, a 10 second circuit car, like out of the box. So,
crazy.
Yeah. So it's, I like to help people over here learn about these misconceptions and start getting them right. And, yeah, just there's heaps to learn on our channel. Sometimes I feel like I need to have a separate channel with chronological order.
Yeah, no, there's so much information. You can find everything on there.
Yeah,
if you type it in, it'll come up.
I'm going to do some more tech videos this year where I kind of redo some of the stuff from 5 or 6 years ago, simplify it, have more stuff with modern technology so people can kind of go and break it down into categories. Like, how do I choose a turbo for my RB26? What oil should I use? I've already done. You know, how do I choose the right transmission? Like I want to kind of, every question you see a RB owner, Skyline owner have on the net, I want to create a tech video for that, because it's a hell of a lot easier to reply with watch this instead of, you know, writing out a big thing. So I am getting there. It's time. Like, you know, YouTube doesn't pay as much as people think. So creating the time and I guess the funding to kind of then make all those tech videos, I'm getting there. I've got a lot going on. So yeah, that's my goal. I want to make it so every GDR in the world can use what we do as a resource to learn and build a better car. And my favorite interaction with people that I've noticed is we haven't got the world's biggest subscriber base by any means. We're not vloggers. We're not doing stupid, silly viral things and stuff like that. But all of our interactions are, hey, man, nice to meet you. I watch all your videos. Thanks for helping me learn about the car.
Right.
Thank you for your help. And to me, that's, look, don't get me wrong. I guess the money of millions of subscribers would probably be nice. But I don't want people to come up and just say, yo, you're famous. Can I get a photo? And that's it. They just want the photo to show someone else. Look, I got a photo with someone famous. I would rather... like that, and that means I meet a lot of GDR owners. I've got 100 new friends this weekend, probably 200, and most of them are surprised. They're like, oh, you don't actually care that you're on YouTube, you just want to hang out with GDR people. I'm like, yeah, man, that's all I want to do.
So
yeah, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help everyone over here, help them learn and build better cars, and that's hopefully
so
what we can do.
Do you guys have any like recommendations for standalones?
I always say whatever your tuner uses. So like, for example, I've worked with Howtech for a long time. And, you know, I've gone from, I had like E11 back in the day. Like I've had the Platinum Pro plug-in. I've had the 2500. Now the Nexus is going into mine. Fantastic. And
Nexus is going into yours.
Yeah, right now. My 32 is having a big changeover. I want to be able to control the four-wheel drive through the ECU. I want to have I wanted to rewire the whole car. Nexus has a PDM built-in keypad. So my wiring guy can put everything through the Nexus, not have like a body loom and an engine loom and a something else loom and whatever. I mean, and look, let's face it, that's as much as I love a lot of brands, like most people consider Motec the top dog, right?
Yeah.
But I've done stuff with Mtron, amazing product, has some totally different torque modeling capabilities in there. Link ECU's done some fantastic stuff with GTRs. You know, they've got, you know, some very, very fast cars in Australia running Link as well. So if you want to say, what have I seen in all the quick GTRs the most, I would have to say that it's probably Howtech, Link, Mtron, and Motec are probably like the main ones you see the most. And then working with the GDR community, I see them. Which one do you use? Ask your tuner. Because if he can't tune it, what's the point?
Right.
Like it's, you don't go to like T1 does Motec. You don't rock up with a Link that he's never used before. No, and even though Tony's an amazing tuner and one of the most smartest tuners I've met over here, he hasn't tuned one before, which means he's then got to, that time taken to get familiar with that. Well, if you go to someone like, you know, like CID have done heaps of Howtech, so like he just got your base map and everything ready to go, and the first part of the tune's easy, and then it's, I say pick your tuner first and then work backwards from there.
That was what Herman mentioned before earlier, which made a lot of sense. I like that, the fact that he had mentioned that before. So what about if you wanted to convert your car to all-wheel drive?
Convert to all-wheel drive as in you've got
like you have the RB and it doesn't have to be a Supra, it could be like a S chassis car.
Look, you can do it. The problem is like more to do with obviously the all-wheel drive one, you've got to have a GTR front upright, which then means you've got to be able to put that suspension and subframe into the car. So if you've got a GDST, the front subframe and all that sort of stuff can go in, but then you've got the problem that the floor is different to where the transfer case goes and the front prop shaft. So therefore, now you've got to cut the floor. I remember Full Race did a conversion kit to turn S14 Silvias into all-wheel drive GTRs, which I almost wanted to do to my S14 Silvia at one point before I had a GTR. So it can be done, but is it worth the headache? Look, I know a guy that's doing a 34 GTT right now, and I talked to him on the weekend. He's got to cut the floor and had to buy rear subframes and front subframes and like, it's a bit of work, but then you've got to get the all drive system to work. Now you can, if you want to get the factory system working, it's a bit of a nightmare. But if you just buy like a Full Race ETS Pro or have a Nexus controlling it, then it's easy.
Right.
I mean, that just gets rid of so much grief because the four-wheel drive system in the GTR, it's an awesome system, but as it gets old, if something fails in that system, it can be a nightmare to diagnose and fix it and sort of get it right. But if you have a Nexus, a Motec or an ETS Pro standalone four-wheel drive controller, just a lot easier to get it right.
And you'd have to run a get rag transmission if you wanted to do a...
No, you can do the 5-speed.
You can do the 5-speed.
5-speed or get rag. I love the get rag, but it's so expensive. Probably because of me. I gave away one of the biggest secrets ever, and I always tell this story. The Mines, everyone watches the Mines GTR video.
Right.
Where they're back in the day with, you know, option video, and they're driving around this tiny little track and everyone's freaking out how fast it is. And if you actually watch that video and you cover the taco and the speedo and turn the volume off and watch it, and you know cars well enough, you're like it's fast, like it's 500-600 horsepower, but they're carrying on like it's got 1,000. And you watch it and you go, the actual rate of acceleration with the road moving is not out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
So why does it look so mental? Well, it's because it's got a shorter diff ratio. They say 411s, but I heard rumors that potentially even 4.3s or 4.6s ended up in that car on short tracks. No one will confirm or deny.
Right.
But if you, and I'm not taking anything away from the car, it's not about that. The car's amazing, but it's amazing because of the transmission and gear ratios and diff ratio. It's not amazing because they've revolutionized some responsive engine that no one else knows how to do. We can build an engine more responsive than that Mines car from 20 years ago. There's heaps of modern technology, but if you don't match it to the 6-speed with short diff ratios, it won't look that crazy. Mm. So when I did the 6-speed swap to mine, I tried to reference that a lot to make people go, hey, check this out. Like, this is how this car worked. And it's not an insult to the Mines car. It's more of an education to viewers to say, stop thinking that's the engine purely response. It's still got to build a good engine, but right. Like, don't think there's some secret engine package they have that's some response weapon. Because I hate to say this, I know multiple people that have gone, I'm building a response engine. And I'm like, yeah, well, my single turbo G35-900 normal 26 is more responsive. Like, there's not some secret formula for a 26 that's so much more responsive than others. The secret formula is put a G35-900 on it. Like, that's it.
Right, right.
I haven't seen a set of twins yet that outperforms it in any way. Or I've seen people try 2.8 and V-cams and all this stuff, but then they have the wrong turbo. And it's less responsive than a 2.6 with a G35-900. Like, it's, people keep trying to fight it and come up with new ideas or combos. And I'm just like, I don't know, man. Like, I've got a combo that works and keep trying. Like, it's, I've got something that works, just copy it. Like, right. I love when people copy my combo because they message you and go, man, I copied your combo of your stock bottom end or this bit of the build. And they, I go, how is it? And they go, it's amazing.
I'm like,
cool. That's what I'm trying to do here. He's,
I didn't even mention that before. You had the R34. Yes, you had an R34 with the VR38.
Yeah. That car's been like being forgotten about.
Yeah. And that was years ago. That was done.
It was like 2016 or something I did that.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It was before I even moved into my main office. I was still working from home.
Yeah.
Got from Power Cruise, said he rang me one night probably on the at a party with people and goes, Hawkins, if you had to build the GTR to end all GTRs at Power Cruise, what would you build? I go, are we talking like, no expense spared, your budget, my budget? He goes, oh, my budget, your favors, what would you build? Okay, so it's gonna be realistic here. And I just straight away go, I'd build an R34 GTR Skyline that has a Z-tune kit, has, you know, 18 by 11s on it with big brakes, a sequential gearbox, and I'd do a VR38 swap with like 1400 horsepower. And he goes, that's pretty specific. Goes, can it be done? I go, don't know, no one's done it. He goes, right. If it can be done, how much money do you need to get started? I said, I need 100K in a car on Monday and I can start. And he goes, right. I go, I'll call you back tomorrow. I got to find out something. So I drove to Brintec where my mate Josh was. He said he had a 35 and a 32 on the hoist. Do some measurements. I ring Gut back and go, I can do it. Has anyone done it? I go, no. He goes, but you can do it. I go, yeah, I can do it. I've got a good team around me. Like, we can do this. And he goes, all right. So I jumped on a plane. I flew to Queensland. Walked out of the car park, got 100 grand cash, walked back inside, flew back to Sydney, bought a rolling shell R34 that was just minus engine.
Yeah.
And we built what was called a Rubisu at the time, which is like a Japanese sort of pronunciation for Elvis because he had another muscle car called Elvis. He chose to wrap it chrome green. So all the people out there go, oh, you wrap that? That was his choice. He just wanted a color that pissed everyone off.
Yeah.
He wanted exhaust out the side, screamer out the bonnet. And yeah, we did a VR38 swap. So essentially, was an engine swap, not a drivetrain swap. So we didn't put the GR6 in it and all that stuff. It had a Alban sequential, but the bell housing was to suit VR38. And then the biggest piece of the puzzle was like, how do we get the front diff ratio to make the back? And luckily Alban said, you wouldn't believe this. We made a 411 diff ratio for Team America, Time Attack team years ago. Do you want, we've got one. I went, bullshit. That's done. I went, done. Yeah. So it was, the only thing you have to do is you have to place the VR38 in the exact right spot for the diff,
okay,
which leaves you no choice. It has to go there.
Right.
And then you can either change some stuff on the engine or clearance the firewall a little bit, but it actually wasn't that hard. Like, I try to say it's hard just so people go, oh, don't copy. But
yeah,
it's actually pretty easy. And then the gearbox pretty much sat in the very close to the factory position, custom gearbox crossmember. Mm-hmm. Tail shaft was like factory back half, just shortened the front half, and then rear is the rear. And then we found out that the drive shafts from an R35 have the same spline as into the hubs of a for 35, 34, etc.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we just need to shorten the front shafts, and that's it. Done. VR38. And then the four-wheel drive system, it uses the transfer case from a 32 or a 33 right. 34. So the four-wheel drive system is out of a Skyline. So really the only thing that changed is the engine. And then you got to make like turbos fit, and we had turbos up the front. And it was wild. We did it with a stock engine. It was a wrecker engine, so we didn't know its health. A piston like cracked for what we don't even know why. No data to show why. And then it kind of like sat for a little bit, and then it got sold to Matuk's Racing. And one of their customers went crazy, and they kind of then took it more into a street car, while Gut wanted a power cruise car with roll cage and exhaust out of hanging out of it and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So it popped flames everywhere. Then Matuk's bought it. They continued it on and finished it off, which is good. I would have loved to have finished it off, but like business is business, right? Like right. It wasn't my car.
Right.
So Matuk's got it. They finished it off. I think it went the chrome green got peeled off, then it was red, then it was white, now it's midnight purple, and now it's in the UK.
So I did see one on Instagram.
Same car. That's my idea.
That's the purple one.
That's my idea, that car. And and I had a good team around me, Josh from Brintech, guys from Howtech, Precision, the guys at Red Sun doing all-nighters for like a week, Chris from CS Engineering, RL from CPC. I don't forget who helped with that car. Like a lot of people put into help with that thing. It was a mission. Like it was a wild build.
So it's definitely a car that gets a lot of attention. Those videos go viral on there.
I should resurrect some of them for social media.
Is it the only one that has been done?
I know there are other, like there's a drag 32 in Russia. I don't know what it's done. I don't think Russia's doing a lot of drag racing at the moment. I know someone was doing one in Tassie. There's plenty of rear wheel drive ones, but I think as a fully functioning all wheel drive engine swap one, I think it's still it's the only one I know of. I'm not saying no one else has done it, but I know I think the 32 was kind of doing it at the same time as me, but it was a race car, so it kind of didn't need to do the same sort of thing, and we're kind of doing it. I think he just got it going as I was sort of starting. So I'm not going to claim first, I'm not going to claim only, like whatever, but that one that everyone has seen, that was our brainchild. And yeah, look, and hats off to Matuk and the owners of that car that took it to the next level. Nice. And obviously now it's in the UK, and now it's a midnight purple full leather interior street car. It's hectic.
It looks so good, and the engine bay is all cleaned up too. There's a bunch of
See, when we first built it, it was very much like imagine building a prototype proof of concept. Like that was stage one. We didn't get to go to stage two or three. We put the jigsaw puzzle together and got it going. And once that was done, then it's just straightforward modifying after that, if that makes sense. So yeah, I got offered to buy it back at one point. I just didn't have money, so yeah, would have loved to have it back, but it was a big project, and that's so huge. Cool.
It's crazy because I feel like people always talk about doing that, but I feel like that video kind of gets overlooked, like
Australia,
you said.
Bro, yeah, fuck around,
yeah.
But you're still gonna find out,
right? So what is next for you this coming year, aside from GTR Festival? What do you have coming up?
Any other bills? Besides GTR Festival Australia in May, GTR Challenge and Drag Battle in April, Runway Thrash in September, GTR Festival here, probably working at World Cup and SEMA and everything and all that. Events aside, my 32 GTR's in the middle of another overhaul. Went down the rabbit hole. It was just meant to be change head gasket and bigger rear housing. It's now, like, if you watch our channel, it's billet sequential, billet dry sump, all new wiring loom, painted engine bay. It's gone. We're going to make it perfect at that power. I'm not trying to make more power. I'm just trying to make it so that now, instead of 1,000 being perfectly reliable, now I want 1,150 to be perfectly reliable.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah. And then once I've done that, I'm an idiot and I'll turn it up some more and go, shit.
Right.
Break something and then go, okay, now I'm going to make that reliable. So I've got a Group A tribute car I'm in the middle of building. It's going to get the old sequential. I've got all the parts for it. I just need some time. My Time Attack Tire Jet 200 is going to go back to old Time Attack, try and go in the 28s, which is... mind-blowing for that car. I'm going to sell my Zed when I get back, and I've probably released this by accident in a couple of places, but I've got a 35 GDR on the way thanks to cars from Japan.
Oh, really?
So yeah, wow. my American 35 brothers, I'm one of you now. I actually, believe it or not, I didn't want one for a long time. The last probably 12, 18 months, I started going, oh, maybe I should get a 35. You know, it's just like, and then... people go, oh, don't get an old one. They got this problem. I'm like, dude, I'm going to rebuild the whole car from front to back at some point. Like, who cares, right? It's more as a project car on YouTube for content, buying a 17 model for $200,000 Australian dollars or 180 and then just doing the like that. I'd rather be like YouTube spec, right? We buy the Australia's cheapest R35 GTR and it's like high kilometer and all this. So I had, and I like buying ones that if it's, why spend another 100K when I can use that 100K or less to essentially rebuild it myself? So we're going to get an R35 GDR. We're going to go through the same steps. When's it arriving? I don't know. I don't think you'll see it till after GDR Festival, to be honest, just because even if it does arrive before then and I make it work, I'm just not going to have time to touch it.
Right.
So the gold car, everyone harasses me. Project No Secrets. When's that happening? Blah, 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 blah. And you know what? Thank you. Thanks for... I'm glad people support it and appreciate it. So I'm not upset I'm getting harassed. It's probably a good thing. Mm-hmm. But the easiest thing to say is between building the 32, Jet 200, the Group A car, and then potentially a 35, people go, why don't you just do the gold one first? I'm like, the other cars already have everything. Like, they don't, they're not from scratch. Well, the gold car's a roller, but it's like there's no engine, no box, no interior, no wiring, no brake light, like nothing. And the most expensive thing is... engine and box. Now, am I waiting for Herman's blocks and head? Probably.
Yeah.
Do I want to try and get the 8HP like auto style box? You know, yeah. But until I kind of like have one of those major pieces sitting there, it's very hard to kind of go, let's work on it. Mm-hmm. The GDR's come to the US. So once it leaves for the US and the Group A car's done, it's like, well, the gold car will be staring at me every day going, hey, let's go, man. Like, it's so I'll get there. It's just, I don't have a team of mechanics. I don't even have any full-time staff to work on cars. I know you got the dream of like the compound and all that here, but man, you got 350 million people, we've got 27, and the algorithm just doesn't, it's very difficult to break out of the Australian, I guess, like the algorithm and go big here, because YouTube wants American viewers to see American videos with American ads on it.
Right.
American advertisers don't want their ads played on some dude with a weird accent.
No, yeah, you're right. It's true.
So like we're fighting that, but we do a lot more than YouTube. We've got a corporate production company. We've got events. Like we do a lot. So it's kind of, it all works together and I don't care. I love what I do. So it doesn't really worry me sitting there dreaming of what anyone else has got. Don't care.
So how do you guys fund these builds? Maybe between you and Herman, obviously he's...
Bogart.
Pocket.
My project cars, honestly, I reckon out of every project car we've done, maybe some have been paid, like Spares Box sponsored a build off series and, you know, Uniclutch, we built a Supra with them. So like the ones where it's like, we don't own the car, which aren't many, to be honest, we're still in charge of the build. I'd say 90% of it. There's usually some obligations. Outside of those, every other car we've ever done, I've personally bought it using like money from the corporate production side of things because I want to do it.
Right.
I don't buy a project car because the fans demand it. And that's not because I wouldn't. It's just the YouTube money has to catch up and then we'll do that. And it will. Like it's getting there. It's not like, I'm not complaining about that. I'm just, it's just business, right? Like, oh, why haven't you bought this? I'm like, because I've already got this. Like it's, so there's been a lot of personal, I guess, investment into them. But the cars I want to keep, like my GTRs and my Silvia, I don't care. Like whatever. How much are they worth? I don't know. Yeah. Like, what are they insured for? None of your business. Like it's
yeah.
What do they owe you? I don't know. Like how do you really keep track when you're working with partners and constantly changing and sort of, you know, you earn everything you get. Like there's not one part on that car I didn't earn. Mm-hmm. Like and the development we do with some of our partners is invaluable to them and us. Like I hate the word influencer for some reason, but at the same time we probably influence more people to use what they do because. Sponsored or not, if it goes on the car, it better work. And if it works, we're going to prove it. So that's what you want, right? Like it's the more partners we have to provide us with stuff to test, the better it is for the viewer. That's how I look at it. Some people go, oh, but you got given that part. Of course it works. I'm like, dude, lap time don't lie, man.
That's not always true though.
That's why I always show raw onboard laps.
Yeah.
Never an edited lap. We always, in our testing videos of the circuit, it's always show the whole lap. So if you want to piss fart around and try and say we faked it, like some Nürburgring lap record or something, we don't. So it's like, so for us, it's, I love working with companies to like, you know, test parts and prove them and do like, I like myth busting, like, you know, twins versus single was a huge one for us. Like even things like how cold air intakes do and don't work. And we tested intercoolers on a GTR. We tested six throttle versus single throttle. Everyone argues about it. They argue. All right, and prove it. And we tested multiple six throttle manifolds as well. We tested Nismo versus stock versus Hypertune. We tested single throttle versus six throttle. Like people love that stuff because it's like they've heard everyone talk about, oh, you should definitely go single throttle on your GDR. I'm like, do you know why? Like, have you tested it? Do you know why? Do you actually know why? Or mm-hmm. you decided to use it and you like your car, so therefore you're going to tell people it's the right choice. Most people who give you advice are giving you advice because they want to validate their decision. And that's normal. It's not a bad thing. It's like you think your car's awesome, so therefore your parts work, right? So
you're biased already.
I always say to people, have you tested 25 different turbos? No. Well, how do you know? Have you driven 200 different GTRs to know the difference? No. You've only driven yours. Well, how do you know? And I'm not saying I know all of it. I'm just saying I've driven enough GTRs, done enough rounds of mods, done enough testing to have like an actual, like, real explanation for why it's better, not just it's better.
Right.
Like, if someone says to me, oh, what's better, this or this? If I say, I don't know, I haven't tested it, I'll just say, I don't know. But if I go, that is better, hey, check this out, dynograph, video, results, quarter mile, lap times, and that's what we try to do.
So you mentioned single turbo versus twin turbo, right? So you did a video covering that. And is there a basic way for you to kind of explain your take on that?
And twins in the bin, single for the win. Okay. We have a sticker for that, by the way. You can buy it on our website. I don't hate twins. I'm going to use them on my Group A GTR. But if you, and I don't mind the argument, it's funny. Like, I have a bit of a laugh with it, right? But don't try and tell me that there are certain applications where twins work better. Your turbos don't know what the application is. They just receive exhaust gas and spin and then blow some air out, right? They don't know. They don't know you're doing circuit. They don't know you're driving on the street. There is no application where on a performance level, twins work better than a single when you're comparing low mount factory position twins. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say twins in general because there are other options. But if you're talking about low mount twins that, you know, sit in the factory position, I can put a single on that outperforms stock ones down low and makes more power up top than almost any twin you put on, unless you, you know, custom make like big billet wheels or whatever. And people go, oh, your test when you did that, there's newer technology now. I go, yeah, on both. The new technology on manifolds too. Like anyone that I've seen try to show me that, like, oh, this single works better than those twins work better than single, I'm like, yeah, because you did the test wrong. And I got accused of doing the test wrong, but I know I didn't. Like, we chose a turbo that had more airflow potential than the twins, but it was more responsive. And then people say, oh, but if it was bigger twins, it would match the power. I go, yeah, and be laggier. So like the single won on both counts. It was more responsive and made more power and did it easier and cleans up the engine bay and has less heat soak. And like, so the performance is not only better on the power, it's better over time from less heat soak. Plus twins are a bitch to work on, man. Like, they're not fun. Oh yeah. You got to have hands like, you know, like you're 4 foot tall and like you got to, we custom make and grind off like little spanners and stuff to get to bits on the, I've had people go, stuff this, I'm dropping the engine out of the car, pull the turbos off. Like, it's, they are not fun, right? And you can't get under there, you can't get anywhere. Like, GDR engine bays are hectic. There's so much stuff in there until you build like a car, you know, a fully dedicated 8 second GDR with all the fruit, you can sort of get rid of a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But twins versus single, like I said, twins have their place. Like, if you want the engine bay to look stock, if you want it to be period correct, if you want to build a Group A tribute, if you just want that OEM plus look, there are plenty of cool, like, 20, believe it or not, HKS 2530s are still one of the best turbos ever for low mounts. They're awesome. They make heaps of power.
HKS turbos.
Yeah, old ones though. Like, I'm talking like early 2000s.
So there is a place for them because Tommy Effia uses a lot of HKS, like JDM actual, rare parts. And I feel like a lot of people, when they have RBs, especially in the States, they want to go big turbo or, you know, precision or Garrett. I don't want to say there isn't a place for it, but if you're going to put an RB in your car, you're going to probably want to put like a bigger turbo on it, you know?
So you should, man up, right? But there is a place for OEM Plus. And I've met Tommy Effier, and man, we've had some good arguments. Like, we're like our, my followers, his followers argue. Like, but we actually met at SEMA last year and we get along great. Like, and his personality is one of those ones where, like mine, you can be divided. Someone might watch this and go, man, that Andrew guy's a wanker. Someone else watches Tommy Effier and go, that guy's a prick. Like, this. And that happens, right? That's fine. But you also get a lot of people that do follow you. And I guess as long as you've got enough people following you to do what you want to do, I guess that's what matters, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we got along great and he admits it. Like, he goes, I build OEM plus style cars and restore cars. You guys over there are building 1200 horsepower, 8 second street cars. They're not anything alike. And he doesn't pretend that he can build what I build. I could probably build what he builds though. And that's the thing, like OEM plus, like that style of thing. But just as if you admit that what you're doing low mounts for is for that reason, don't try and tell me that it performs better than the single though, because you're wrong. Like, it's just,
Yeah.
I've got the data, I've got the proof, and yeah, you can get a dynograph that makes those low mounts look better than that single, but if you're doing the test, I guess, on an even playing field of like either power potential or response potential, the single will outperform the twins. I mean, maybe there's some combo that's like, hey, this combo versus this combo, it's better, but mm-hmm. as an overall thing, like a blanket rule, a single will be a better setup on an RB. Plus, you've got to remember, they love to rev. They're dopey yeah. things down low right. anyway. Like, get some gas flow into that rear housing and let it sing. That's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like it's, you're not hurting response down low because it hasn't got any to begin with. Mm-hmm. So how do you wreck it? It's not there anyway.
Yeah.
So that's my thing. And I've driven plenty of cool cars with twin low mounts. Like when I had high flow dash sevens with the Getrag with 411, the car was mad. Like it was awesome.
Yeah.
But then I went single and it was just better. Like it wasn't bad before. It went from good to, holy fuck, this is awesome. So yeah. But Tommy Effier is going to come to GDR Festival too, actually.
He will.
On the
he
topic
will be.
Of him. Yeah, he wants to be one of the judges. He wants to judge the Aussie builds. And I said to him, I'm going to take him for a drive in mine on full power, make him bring some spare underwear, and he can find out what GTR power is really about. And I said, do you want to drive it? And he kind of went, dude, he told me like the most powerful one he's driven. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll turn the boost controller off so it only makes 800. And you can drive that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'd be good. I'd actually like to take him for a drive in a big Aussie GTR.
That'll be fun to watch. Will TJ Hunt be there and Adam LZ?
Adam's a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. We're talking about it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to say he's definitely coming because if he has commitments with sponsors and businesses
right.
But our conversation is he wants to come. And like when it's confirmed, 100%, then I'll announce it officially. But he told me, he wants to come. Who knows, might bring the Safari GDR, do the rally course. He might try and turn up some of his 32s to have some fun against me.
Yeah.
sorry, Adam, you're going to lose. he actually wants to build like a big one. Like we've been talking about it for about a year now and working with PRP to try and build a big dog. Javier from TRC and Mike from D-Sport have the quickest Skyline GDRs in the US in the 8.9s.
They have the quickest?
Yeah, they are. They're the quickest Skyline GDRs. And there's a GDST rear-wheel drive Turbo 400 one that's quicker, but like all-wheel drive actual Skyline GTR in like, I guess, like a street car.
Right.
TRC has gone 8.9 and Mike from D-Sport's gone 8.9, R32, R33. So Javier needs to hurry up and turn his car up and come get his ass whooped. So ran an 8 before me.
Really?
Yeah. But props off to him. He got help and advice from Aussies and thanked us for helping him get there. And he did it before I did. So.
Yeah.
And then I had to make a bit of a comeback. But he'll be there. Guys from Throttle will be there.
Throttle.
I haven't spoken to Dustin Williams yet, but he'll probably want to come out. I haven't spoken to TJ yet, but hey, hopefully.
This is going to be huge, man.
Yeah, Hurt's excited ass to come with Nappy Boy Automotive. That's where he's now with T-Pain. He wants to come. Gary King Jr. thinks some type of RB god to him, and he's an awesome dude. He wants to come out. Even the ex-Hooning guys are all my friends, like Ron, Vin, Brian, Zach. They're all friends of mine. They all want to come. In fact, some of the ex-Hoonigan production team are probably going to be working at the event.
Yeah.
You know, they all want to come. Artec and PRP sponsor a bunch of drivers. They're trying to get them out. I know Herman, like, you know, he's going to help Amelia Hartford with her build, so she could be there. Like, it's, you know, I mean, like, there's going to be a bit of a YouTuber convention at the same time. Yeah. So, like, but that's all about the media. Like, I've known Kyle from 1320 for a decade, Javier from TRC. And I'm all about media at this event. Like, It's you've got to make sure the drivers get their recognition, the shops get their recognition. Yeah. I always say my job as an event promoter is I have to put the most amount of eyeballs on you when I'm talking to someone, like on you.
Right.
What's your job? And they go, your job's to put on a show. And if you keep that mentality and as an event, everything else falls into place. Like don't sit there going, this is a real race event, four races, but no. You got to think about what does that spectator go through to get there or the guy on YouTube watching the videos? What does he want? And then you put on that show and that's better for everyone. And then you work your way backwards from that to create the show that you want, right? I want the ultimate. If I was a spectator and I woke up on Friday morning and went, I want to do this weekend. Oh, this is GDR Festival. Even if I'm not into GDR, I just go, look at the ad. Oh, this looks mad. What experience is that person going to go through that day? That's what you got to think about.
Yeah.
And then everything else revolves around that. And some people will go, oh, yeah, but it's got to be about the races. Relax, man. Like, they're going to get to race. They're going to have fun. That's fine. But think about that guy that just bought that ticket or took his kid. Like, you convince your missus to go with you if she's not into cars. And you're like, this looks like a fun family day out. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
What's their experience like? Everything from how they get into the venue, how they find the venue, how they buy their ticket, where they park, what they see as they walk in. Like all these things I think of to kind of go, how do I give everyone a great experience? And, you know, some things – may not be perfect for someone somewhere, but if you understand the big picture as a workshop or as a racer, that you're there to put on a show for your brand, your car and yourself, mm-hmm. and my job is to get the most amount of people to watch it, once that relationship like is established, that that's how it works, oh man, it's killer. Like it's killer. That's how you make an event awesome. And that's, we do it in Australia, and I'm hoping we can do the exact same thing here, but just multiplied.
Right. I'm excited, man. I'm really excited for that event. Yeah. I can't wait. I don't think anybody in the States will ever be around that many RBs or GTRs. So you guys should definitely come check out that event. And where can we purchase tickets from?
GTRfestival.com. Once you go there, you can go to the Australia or the US. Right now for the US, like I said, by the time this is out, you would be able to enter everything. Mm-hmm. Some things won't open until later, like the autocross thing will get added in later once we sort some things out with that. But you'll be able, right now you can buy spectator tickets, super seat tickets, VIP tickets, which is like, you know, private grandstand, better parking, catered food, you get a free t-shirt with it, all sorts of stuff like that, like in certain different packages. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be able to enter the car meet and car show. I'd like to like make people understand the car meet is essentially, I want to park inside and hang out. There's no pressure. Stock car can be a 240 that you bought off your grandma that's done like, you know, no kilometers and is dead stock. That's it. But if you want your car to be on display and people check it out with a better spot, room to open the doors and the engine bay, and you want to get judged for trophies, that's the show and shine. So car meet is hang out. Show and shine is I want to show my car off a bit more. All welcome. You know what I mean? Like it's all good. And then, like I said, then you go into drag racing and go from there. We'll have cars we invite to be part of the elite section of the car show.
Yeah.
New builds can get unveiled. So if you've got a mad GTR you're building and you want to like have a crowd around it, pull the covers off and unveil the car. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing in Australia. If you want to do that, email us, just info@gdrfestival.com. My wife Susie's working really hard behind the scenes, building the website, marketing stuff and taking care of that business side of it. My job is to make car people want to go. Her job is to make everyone want to go. That's kind of how we do it. So yeah, she's here now. We're going to go visit the track again this week while we're here and meet up with some people and finalize a couple little things. But man, I'm super excited.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, much success to you and your business. I'm excited for GTR Festival. You guys make sure you guys purchase tickets. And yeah, I'm pretty sure I'll see you in November. Hopefully I can see you before then. Hopefully you can kind of connect on the RB swap as well. And if I have any questions, I'm sure I can reach out.
Of course, man, anytime.
And we still have yet to party, like you mentioned that Australians like to party.
Come to Australia.
So,
or just hang around one more night or whatever.
But we definitely would love to go to Australia at some point. So if I ever am in Australia, we definitely will connect for sure.
Awesome, man. Appreciate it.
Tell the viewers where to find you if they don't know who you are.
Yeah, so our YouTube channel is just Moti Video. Okay. All our Instagram, Facebook, same deal. Just Moti Video. That's all of that side of things. And obviously for GTR Festival, it's just GTRfestival.com. Instagram and Facebook to match as well. So keep it straightforward. I always say name an event what it is. It's a festival. It's GTRs.
So make sure you guys like, share, comment, and subscribe. Make sure you guys are listening on all streaming platforms. We'll catch you guys on the next one. Peace.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.